Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Even though I know he's just fine, the recent transition of a friend has upset me very much. I just miss him. Grief is not something that you escape just because you know that people are fine. There's a process to grief, which is pretty painful. But grief is universal. Setbacks, stresses, everyone has them, and they can be very empowering. In fact, all of these things that happen to us that we wish would never happen turn out to be essential to genuine spiritual growth. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and our guest today is psychologist Paul Coleman. Dr. Coleman's book, I love this title, Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces, lays out a simple and powerful program to transform you in the face of grief and loss, and as he tells me, even good things that are overwhelming to you, each of those things is an opportunity to really seize and grow spiritually, and I'm excited, really, to welcome you. Paul, I'm so glad you're here.
Well, thank you, Roberta. I'm delighted to speak with you today.
Now, Paul and I have met a couple of times just in the course of doing things and had some conversations. Paul in person is a really deep, quiet man, and he specializes in helping people who are going through these traumatic events. What made you want to do that? Why is this how you want to spend your life?
My junior high school class went to tour a facility about 30 miles away. This was in the state of Massachusetts.
Where in Massachusetts?
I grew up in Northampton, which is Western.
And I went to Smith, so we already are good friends.
Oh my goodness, that was my backyard, just so you
right.
know. I played there all the time.
Yeah, that's
great. And anyway, we went to a place, a town called Belchertown, where they had a state school that housed people who were very seriously physically or cognitively disabled. And we took a tour, and we went into a ward that housed children in cribs. And we stopped at one of the cribs. And the woman didn't even tell us this young boy's name. He looked to be about 3. And he was, all he did was breathe. That was his entire existence.
Oh.
And to be turned, to get stop bed sores, he had to be fed through a tube. Now, a year before that, my nephew Tony had passed away at age 2. So this young boy looked to be about the same age my nephew was. And when everyone started leaving, I lagged behind. And I put my hand on his back and said hello, trying to connect with him. Of course, he couldn't reply. And I kept thinking of all the times I would play with my nephews and nieces. And when I left, I said, I want to be in a career where I can help people who feel helpless.
Wow. That is powerful.
And yeah, I discovered...
And you found that you could do it. You found that there were ways you could help.
Yes, yes. And what was most impactful was I discovered that, well, I thought his life had no meaning whatsoever. And then I discovered his life had tremendous meaning for me. And then I went on. I've been a therapist now for 30 years. I've logged in over 50,000 client contact hours. I've written a number of books. I know I've helped many people. So his life had meaning after all. And then I said to myself, well, if his life can have meaning, what about all the rest of us who, when we're going through a very challenging time and we think that we're not accomplishing anything or that we're in despair? And I remember him and I realized that we can all have meaningful lives even when we feel we cannot.
Oh, well, that is very powerful. I have to say that the journey from there to where you are now, I'm sure, has been one of tremendous learning. This book is not just about overcoming grief. This book is about growing spiritually on the deepest levels. And I just want to say, for people who regularly listen to these podcasts, it turns out that Paul Coleman's Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces is the third book in a row that we're talking about on these podcasts that does essentially the same thing. We talked 2 weeks ago with T.J. Woodward, whose astonishing book was able to help us to, and I can't even recall the title of it now, it'll come to me, was able to help us look at how to grow spiritually from the point of view of Eastern religions. It taught us exactly what the teachings of Jesus tell us, but it didn't use the teachings of Jesus. So here we had two different sources of information and one glorious central conclusion. Now, along comes my friend Paul, and what he has done is to do the same thing from a different reality altogether. And that is, psychology. People have been studied, their minds have been studied. He doesn't approach the same big issues from the point of view of a religion or a belief system. I should just say T.J. Woodward's book is Conscious Being. I just had a brain cramp there. But Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces is the same essential teachings as the Gospels and as the Eastern religions. It's all the same. In fact, I'm going to recommend to people, I'm hearing from people now who are reading Liberating Jesus or have read it, why don't you try Conscious Being next? Or why don't you try Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces? Because the more you get the same information, the more it's going to help you transform your life altogether. So I loved this book. I loved it, and I dog-eared a lot of it because it kept ringing so true to me, and it will ring true to you as you read it. It's a whole system. I don't know how you've surely talked to other people about this system, and what I'd like to do is sort of develop it over the course of our brief time together so people get a taste of what they can get from it. But how would you describe your system?
Well, my system is that we're actually going on a journey after our life has been upended in some way, where there's been some major transition. And I realized that there are major pathways, I chose four, that I think all of us go through. And so the purpose of the book is to tell you what these four pathways are, how to navigate them, so you can get through them, because at the end, you will have a higher level of consciousness, you will have a newer perspective, and then you can come back and show others or live a kind of life from a higher level of being. And that's what I think we all need to try to strive for spiritually.
Absolutely. And what this stresses really is people will say, well, they're religious, they're spiritual. These are like equivalent terms, but they're not. To be spiritual, as we're doing it here with Paul, is to go deeper into who you really are, to fix the misconceptions, to become rid of the fears, to accept what you can't change, and then to grow from there, to empower yourself in ways which I found delightful to read about. He's got a lot of little case studies of people, and some of whom he had helped, and others of whom you can see he's probably going to help because of what he knows. But that's what's powerful about this book. It takes us deep. I think that self-awareness is the ultimate awareness, obviously. Well, maybe it's not obvious, but isn't that true? When you become aware of who you truly are, you're able then to better understand everything else.
Yes, and so many people don't know who they are. They have these false beliefs that entail all their limitations, or they believe with our live their limitations. And I tell people that, spiritual growth is often more a process of subtraction than addition. It's getting rid of the stuff,
yes,
that's blocking who we really are underneath.
Yes, yes. Now, that's true, and that's profound. And part of the problem is we don't know what's our true selves and what's later fears and issues that have been added. But so much, I mean, I I obviously, having worked with life after death as a topic for most of my life, I hear from a lot of people who are in grief. And the first thing we can't do is we can't say to them, you got to get over it or get past it or any of that. You don't ever really get over the loss of someone very close to you, but you process it in a very healthy way. And Paul lays that out in simple, simple terms. How to first accept it, which is the first thing, and then to go from there. Well, you tell it, Paul. The first step is acceptance, is it not?
Yes, I call that the first pathway that you will encounter is the path of acceptance, or its counterpart is the path of resistance. And usually at this phase, at this juncture, people are saying, why did this have to happen? It shouldn't have happened. Can I go back in time and change it? I wish I could have done this instead of that. It's a lot of woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Yeah.
Very understandable. And yet, until people can say that they emotionally accept what happened, they don't have to like it, but they have to accept it and stop shaking a fist at that reality, they can't really proceed very far because they're still stuck in what happened and why it happened rather than how can I move forward.
And again, this does not mean that you are no longer grieving. It means that you're using that grief in a more positive way to begin to build yourself spiritually as opposed to staying stuck. So what's the next path? So we've swallowed hard. We've said, my loved one has died, and I accept that. What's the next step?
Well, you know, sometimes as an analogy, I like to tell people to think of Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz because everyone's so familiar with that.
Yes.
When she first lands in Munchkin Land, what does she want to do? I want to go back home.
Yes.
Right? She's like going back in the past and pretending none of this ever happened. But then she's told that in order to get back home, she's going to have to go on this journey, all right? So then she starts to wander. Now, that's the second pathway. It's a wandering phase. I call it the path of inspiration because in this phase, you're more helpless. You don't know exactly where you're going or how to get there. You just know that you have to keep moving. You don't know who you're going to meet along the way. So it is in that helplessness that you can actually become open to inspired thought. You can become open to what new people and new insights have to offer you that you might be closed off to otherwise.
Is this an essential? This is something which always happens once you've accepted the loss. Your mind starts casting around and you go on this journey. You have to think of, now I'm going to go on my journey.
You don't have to think it, but it's exactly how it happens. We may not realize that that's what's happening, but that's precisely what is happening. It's a universal experience.
Okay.
And the bigger the loss or the bigger the upheaval, there's no way you can integrate that immediately. It takes time. So you're kind of in shock. And that's why you go through a wandering phase. I mean, wandering through the desert. Right? We hear that.
You're looking for solutions or for inspiration or for how to sort of take the next step in your life, kind of how to really fully integrate this into your life.
Yes, and you're asking a lot of questions, but you don't have a lot of answers yet coming from yourself because you're bumping into things. You're trying new things, but nothing quite feels right. And it's only when you open yourself up and say, I need some help. This is where we meet wizards on the road in the famous myths, you know, Lord of the Rings, or Dorothy meets the Scarecrow and the Tin Man.
Yes.
There's always somebody that you go to or that you encounter that helps you along the way. And this mythology represents the spirit or God or any sort of being of a higher level of consciousness who can guide you because you don't have all the answers. And what's interesting is they don't tell you everything. None of these guides spell it out for you.
Yes.
They give you a general direction, and that takes you a little bit further down the road, and then you're stuck again, and you need more guidance.
You call this the hero's journey, and talk about all the different ways it basically is at the core of every great story. Every great story starts with some sort of upheaval and someone who didn't choose to do this, just as if you're in grief, you didn't choose that path either. But these people have had to go on a journey, and the journey turns out to have been very much worth the effort. So how do you know you've sort of, you're heading for the next of the three paths? You found the wizard, or you found the beginning of an understanding, but you aren't all the way there yet, right?
Correct. You're still encountering new things, and you might have a plan, you might have a goal, but you're not exactly sure how you're going to get there. The transition to the third path, which I call the pathway of release, happens when you seem to start taking a more proactive stance. You're no longer hesitant about where do I go and what I do, but you have some ideas about what you want to try to do. This is the battle phase. In a movie, and this is true of every movie that's good, it's about 10 or 12 minutes into the movie, the bottom falls out. The hero is like in a crazy situation.
Yes.
Now they're scrambling. Maybe there's bad guys chasing them. They don't know where they're going, right? And then about halfway through the movie, there's a turnaround where the hero starts to be more active, gets more clever, or gets more courageous, but is now starting to make a difference. This is the slaying dragons phase. This is the warrior phase, where you're feeling a little bit more empowered because of the help that you've received, but you're still not where you need to be, and you still may have some challenges up ahead.
Okay, so then we're at the third path, and describe that for us, Paul.
I call it the path of release. It's really a path where you're developing more confidence and more trust, and you do that because you're releasing false beliefs that you once held on to, that you can no longer hold on to. Let's go back to Dorothy. This was a young girl who said, you know, my family doesn't understand me, and I have to run away from home. So her coping strategy was to run, and she believed that people didn't understand her. Now, on her third part of the journey, she's going after the Wicked Witch's broomstick. She's showing more courage. She's not running away, she's running toward. And she's releasing some of her own beliefs about herself. She doesn't see herself as this panicked little girl who falls in with the pigs in the beginning of the movie.
So that's why you call this the path of release. We're beginning to get beyond these sometimes preconceived notions and beliefs that have kept us trapped even before the event that caused us to begin this journey. We perhaps had them all our lives, and we're starting to be free of them, to let them go.
Yes, and most people, they're not always aware of what those beliefs are if they haven't been challenged. But many people doubt themselves. They I'm not good enough, or
yes,
I'm not smart enough, or it's my fault.
Yes.
You know, they blame themselves if things have gone wrong. So now they're afraid to take action because they don't want to cause any further harm. They don't want to make more mistakes. But now they're paralyzed. So it's on this third part that they have to release that, because they're not going to make any progress unless they can start releasing some of these negative beliefs. And it doesn't mean that they believe all the positives now. It just means that they're going to have the attitude of, maybe I was wrong. Maybe there's something else inside me that's more powerful than I realize.
I work with small businesses as an attorney, and I call this point when you get the gift of divine desperation, because business owners learn a lot of the wrong lessons, especially early in their building of the business. And so they get to a point where year after year, they can't get above whatever their gross is, whether it's 100,000 or 10 million, the business hits a ceiling, and it's they who are the ceiling. And only when they give up, and allow, you know, understand that they're desperate because I got to save my business and I've got this and that issue. Only then will they begin to look critically at their own beliefs that are limiting them. So this happens in business too. It probably happens in every phase of life that you have to go on this journey when you finally have hit a crisis. But this being able to release those old beliefs is the beginning of wisdom. So getting to this is critical. You say that the opposite path, if you don't go toward release, is despair.
Yes.
How is that?
Well, because part of the release phase is also a phase of trust, where you have to become more at peace with uncertainty. And many people, when they're afraid, they don't want uncertainty. They want certainty.
Yes.
And they overanalyze. They overthink. They imagine all of the problems that could be coming their way and how can I solve them? And they become overwhelmed by that. So now they can't even move at all. So there has to be a trust. And the trust that they have to have is not just in their own ability or in the divine ability to help them, but to be able to coexist comfortably with uncertainty. And if you can't do that, it means you're not trusting. If you have to have certainty, it means you don't trust.
So accepting uncertainty is critical to developing spiritually.
It absolutely is, because there's so many things we can't completely understand. There's so much
mystical
and paradox. I tell people that, you know, the opposite of trust is not doubt. The opposite of trust is certainty. Trust implies having some doubt.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So when
when we seek certainty, it's a never-ending quest, because we can believe something very strongly, but how many times have we believed something strongly only to find out, maybe I was a little off here. Maybe there's more to it. You know, and understanding God, understanding the divine.
Yeah.
It's a never ending.
No, there is no way to understand God, and anyone who claims to do it simply doesn't grasp the enormity of the Godhead, and how narrow our perception really is while we're here. It opens out quite a bit after death, but this is all right. Does everyone see how this is really a spiritual quest, and it's a universal quest? I mean, nobody asks for the thing that causes us to start on this, basically the gift of the divine desperation or a death or a losing of a job or end of a marriage or any of the things that have knocked the pins out from under us.
Yes.
That's the start. What you're showing us is that's the beginning. It is a gift. Not all gifts are happy to open, but it's a gift nonetheless.
Yes, and there's a point in time when it's usually after the fact or it's long after the journey started that we can piece some of the things together, and we realize that there might have been a deeper meaning as to why all of this happened. I was speaking to a lady yesterday who has chronic Lyme's disease to the point where it's high. She's disabled.
Oh,
there are times she'll spend a week in bed. Very bright lady, but it's gotten into her brain. And she said something profound. She said, you know, I was thinking about this, and she said, if I could go back in time and remove the lines, but I also had to remove all of the wisdom I had gained, I would not remove the lines.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yep. She said, I'm a more patient person. I'm a more compassionate person towards others with disabilities. I appreciate the little things in life, the things that we take for granted, the smell of a flower, the trees swaying in the breeze, and I'm a changed person because of it. That's amazing.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. And that's the essence of where we're trying to go before we have undertaken this journey. We want to get to her acceptance and peace. And we're going to talk more about that in the second segment. We're going to get to the fourth path too, which is one I want to talk a little more about. But first, I'm just going to say this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and Flying High in Spirit. You can learn more about all my books and find my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, our guest today is Dr. Paul Coleman. He's a psychologist who decided in his teens that what he wanted to do was to really help people. This is the path he's chosen. He specializes in helping people to process and grow past grief, loss, and the inevitable stresses of life. And clearly, he does a beautiful job of it, because what he's learned from this is a terrific book called Finding Peace When Your Heart is in Pieces. For whatever reason, it doesn't matter how you got there, you're at the start of a glorious journey. Now, the first three paths that everyone has to take who is on this hero's journey are the path of acceptance, the path of inspiration, the path of release. And now the fourth one, Paul, tell us about that.
This is the path of compassion, and this is where we take what we have learned and we use it for a greater good. If we don't use it for a greater good, everything has gone to waste. So this is where we say, I'm a more compassionate person, or I'm a more understanding person. When we go back to people in our lives, or we go back to the town we started from, Dorothy goes right back to Kansas at the end, and we share this wisdom, or we help people with this wisdom, but we now look at the world from a slightly higher perspective.
Yes.
And
yes.
We no longer judge it in exactly the same way we did before. We have a different insight, and we're giving back. And that way our hurts and our losses and our challenges become highly meaningful for others.
Yes. Well, that was where your friend with Lyme had arrived.
Yes.
That is the point of all of these quests too. When if you start out reading Conscious Being, or you read Liberating Jesus, or you just sit down with the red letters in the Gospels, the words that Jesus actually spoke, and you start to learn from them, the point of all of it is to get you to the point where you can open out to the world, and really it's from other people, and it's in help, in service, in joy of life with other people, I think, that the greatest growth comes. Don't you find that's true?
Yes, it is. It is. And part of the journey, we start noticing what's called synchronicity.
Yes.
You know, these meaningful occurrences. And that's the divine kind of winking at us. It's the divine
yes.
kind of telling us we're here. Pay
yeah.
attention.
There
right?
are some people who call those God winks. You're right about
yes.
that.
Yes, 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 yes. And I've had many, many, many of them.
Me too.
In fact, I'll tell a quick story. Before I was writing this book, I had been delaying writing it. And I was walking into my building, my office building, on a Sunday to do some paperwork, and I heard the fluttering of wings, and just a little bit above my head, a hawk zoomed by me, and it was carrying a pigeon, and it crashed the pigeon into the building and flew away, killing the pigeon.
Mm.
And I thought that was a violent act. I didn't understand it. I'd never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Later, I went out to the bookstore, and I opened up a book on symbology, on the meaning of hawks. And they had all these different hawks and pictures, and I found the one that I saw. It's from the Northeast, where I'm from, and it likes pigeons. And I said, oh, that's interesting. And it said, this hawk is called the ghost bird, and if you see it, it means you are supposed to be doing spiritual work.
Oh.
So I said, oh, I think I might need to start my book. I then went to Barnes and
right.
I then went from Barnes & Noble across the street to a coffee shop, Starbucks, and as I was getting my coffee, I looked down, and they had one CD for sale. It's called Ghost Bird.
Oh, isn't that – that is a very great synchronicity. Isn't
yeah.
that wonderful?
So that was the kick in the pants, and I started writing.
It's really astonishing. From my perspective, these come from our spirit guides. Everybody has a primary guide who is working with us, helping us hit the marks in our life plan. And the way that mine works with me is through synchronicities of several kinds. And most people that I know, I think your spirit guide saying, "Hey, you know, Paul, stop drinking coffee, get back to your typewriter." And that's typical of what they will do. I think that's a lovely story.
Yeah, it's and we have to get out of our own logical mind. I was driving actually to the bookstore again on a different day. It was pouring rain out on a very busy street. There was 6 lanes of traffic, right?
Oh my goodness!
But on this particular day, it was slow and it was pouring rain, and I had to take a left turn to get some coffee. And as I was approaching to do that, I just felt a very subtle no. And I kept driving straight, and I didn't take the left-hand turn. And I was puzzled by this. Huh. And I said, well, I still have a chance to do it. And then I did not take the second opportunity. And the good thing is that I got curious, because I said, I know I'm capable of doing this. Why am I not doing it?
Right.
Right. So then I pulled into the bookstore, because that was coming up next, because they serve coffee there. And I said, well, I'll get my coffee there. And I had an umbrella in my car. And the rain's pouring, and I say, okay, I'll get out and go into the store. And then I didn't get out. I'm just staring out the window. I'm talking to myself, Paul, why aren't you going? You know you can go.
People are looking at you funny through the window.
About 90 seconds goes by, and all of a sudden I feel like, okay, I can go. I get my umbrella. I start jogging, and something caught my eye, and I looked around, and there was this man in a red shirt. He looked to be about 95 if he was a day. Getting out of his car and getting soaked.
Oh.
So I rushed over to him. I asked him, would you like to share my umbrella? He said, thank you. He took my arm like we were old friends, and we walked very, very slowly into the store. And I got inside. I said, would you like me to wait? And he said, no, I'll be here for a while. And he thanked me. And I felt inside my head the words, okay, you can go now.
Isn't that beautiful?
So wow. That was why. Now, I tell people the story not because to say, See how great this is, but because I paid attention. My logical brain said, take a left turn into the coffee shop and you know you can do it. My logical brain said that. My intuitive brain said, something's up and I'm going to pay attention to this.
Yes. See, I would say that was your spirit guide who was giving you that wonderful encounter and allowing you to do something good, which is going to, you know, make you feel terrific. I'll bet you felt terrific the whole rest of the day.
I felt wonderful
yes.
the whole rest of the day. It was funny. The next day I was having dinner with a friend and I was telling him the story. And I said, you know, one of the nice things about it for me personally is that my parents are deceased. And this was like helping my dad because my dad was, right? And I said, how often do I get a chance to help an elderly person who's in that situation? We paid our bill. We walked across the street, and about 30 feet in front of us, an elderly woman got out of a car and fell on the sidewalk.
Oh, my goodness.
And we rushed over to her, and she was bleeding from her elbow. We checked her over to make sure she didn't have any broken bones. My friend lived nearby. He got a first aid kit from his apartment. I stayed with her. And we got her settled. And it was like, now this was helping my mom.
Yes.
It was amazing.
Yes. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
I tell people that it's important, if you're trying to grow spiritually, to keep your heart open to synchronicities, to guidance of spirit in your day, and love these precious opportunities where you can help others. That's why I tell people I answer all my emails. And if you don't hear within 24 hours, send flowers, because every email that I get from someone I don't yet know is usually an important question to them and I'm sure you have the same experience, Paul. People that you don't even know can benefit from what you are able to share with them. And what a
yes.
gift that is to be able to do that. I love it.
It really is wonderful. And you know, when you write books, yes, you'd like them to sell. You'd like to make a difference. But when you get a letter in the mail or an email or a phone call and someone says, this changed my life,
yes.
or this, it's like, that's it. It's perfect.
I know. I will say when I get one of those, okay, now I know why I was born. Before today, I wasn't sure. But reading this one email is enough to make me know why I was born. So that's where this all leads, really. We stop being focused on our own narrow selves, and we open out to spirit and to all the people who are really part of us. We're all part of one being, and that being we would call God, although I call it source or mind, because frankly, religions have given God a bad rap. God isn't like that. God is all that exists. God is infinite, perfect, loving energy, and that's it. And our minds are part of that, and they're all part of each other. So getting to the point where that feels real and makes sense is a primary purpose of the spiritual growth that we're doing in this lifetime. Now, what I'd like to do is talk a little more about that, because the second part of the book, the first part is sort of easy. These are the steps you're going to take, and this is how it will unfold. But that's only where Paul starts. He then takes each of those paths, this is where I really understood, Paul, that you were talking about the same things that Jesus and the Eastern mystics have talked about, which is spiritual growth, which is how to go from where you are now to where you are going to be happy and complete and fulfilled as you cannot possibly imagine now. And I'd like to focus on one thing you say, which is the acceptance of joyful humility. Talk about that.
Yes. Humility is not thinking badly of ourselves or putting ourselves down. It's recognizing that everybody has something to offer, and that we can learn from everybody. You know, I learned from that 3-year-old boy in the crib who was in a coma.
Yes.
I learned from him. He was a powerful ripple, and I was one of his effects. And we can all be ripples, but we have to have a humble heart. If we start getting too caught up in ego, we will go down the wrong path. We will do things for the wrong reasons. We'll do it to have power or to have great influence or to make ourselves look good, you know? I genuinely feel that if I wanted to give, say, $1,000 to a charity, but I did it because I wanted my picture on the front page of the paper.
Yes.
I don't think that $1,000 would have the same impact.
No.
I think somehow it would get diluted in its effect because the intent on my part was not generosity of spirit. It was to make myself look good. Right?
This is an area where that is central to the gospel teachings. It's not sufficiently emphasized by any Christian denomination, but it's the basis. It's really the beginning of true spiritual growth because it gets your ego out of the way. It's a big thing that A Course in Miracles does for us, is to help us to put the ego into its place, and it never does come back again. You still have it. Everybody, it's like you need it, but it's not something then that runs your life anymore. But Jesus says about giving, let your left hand not know what your right hand is doing, and then the gift really counts. That's what you just said. It's all the same. Jesus says, unless you accept the kingdom of heaven like a little child, you will never enter it. And that's again what you just said, to have the humility, the gentleness. Jesus says the last will be first and the first last. If you think you're a big shot here, you're going to be shining shoes there. It's amazing how consistent what you've discovered as a psychologist is to what Jesus says as a great spiritual teacher.
Yes, there's one of my favorite quotes from Mother Teresa. She said, this is humbleness. I am the stubby little pencil with which Jesus writes.
Yes, yes.
And I remember, so I was talking to a priest when Mother Teresa came to New York many, many years ago. She's obviously passed on. And he was saying that a very wealthy man came up to her with his checkbook and said, how much do you want? $25,000, $30,000? Do your nuns need a new car or a van? And she said, no, thank you. No, I have to give you this, he said. And he kept pressing, I want to do this. And she said, what I'd like you to do is go home and be a very devoted father to your children and husband to your wife.
Yeah.
It was like, do this, start there.
Yes.
And I think that's the metaphor. We have to start with ourselves. How many times do we see people, especially in politics, especially with so much polarity going on?
Yes.
We're telling other people how they should be living their lives. You're not doing it right. But we're not looking at how are we living our lives. I always want to make sure that I'm doing what I can do in my life and be a presence. I want to be a healing presence for people. And to do that, I have to be at peace. I have to have integrity. I have to be authentic. I have to be aligned with what I think the source or God wants for me and be humble enough to take some guidance, even if I'm not sure it's the guidance that I would choose.
Yeah, it's important that we, I think, not skip this step, and we really come to understand that the basis of spiritual growth really is this joyful humility, being happy in the humility which is at the core of our being, and which is our birthright. But what I love is you use the word in a way which in the same way Jesus uses it. It's actually the pyramid we think exists is inverted. Those people who are most humble actually are at the top, even though in this life we too often, as you say, think that the big shots are the ones who are at the top. They're not. They're mm-hmm. they're still, they haven't even started on the ladder that the humble people have already climbed.
Yes. And I think, you know, there are times when we want to make a positive difference. Let's give people the benefit of it. Let's give politicians the benefit of the doubt that they want to help. They want to do the right thing. But what tends to happen is they filter the choices of what are they going to do to help. They filter it through, is this going to make my party look
yes.
good?
Oh,
or the
yes.
other party look bad?
Yes.
And if the answer is yes, it will make us look good and them look bad. That's what they do.
Yes.
And it dilutes the power of any good that they might have done. Which
what a
might
great
be one
point
of the
that is. What a great
quite,
point.
Thank you. But I think that's one of the reasons why so many problems we've had, we still have.
But think of what it does to each of those politicians who makes that choice. And he may be a really nice guy. Everybody loves him. He doesn't beat his wife. He's a really nice guy. But he makes that decision. And in doing it, he corrupts his own life. He makes it, he basically sets his own spiritual growth back so much. The hardest of lessons that we can build into our lives, the dead tell us, are wealth and power. It's extremely difficult for anybody to live a life of wealth and power and not be set back spiritually. My spirit guide was Thomas Jefferson. That was supposed to be his last lifetime. And he said afterward he had too much power. He didn't always use it well, and he had to take one more lifetime to get back into balance. That's how hard it is for us to do this. And yet it's not hard. I tell people, yeah, I'm humble because I have a lot to be humble about. But that's kind of the attitude we have to have toward ourselves. And one of the things that gets us there is something else which I love that I think we need to emphasize. The compassion that is the goal here, that to really get us started on our spiritual growth, has to extend to ourselves. And you make a point of that. Self-forgiveness, self-acceptance is critical to our really growing spiritually. Talk about that.
Yeah, it is important. It's one of the hardest things. People sometimes say they can forgive others much more than they can forgive themselves. We sometimes hold ourselves to a higher standard. I think we're afraid to admit that if we could forgive ourselves, we could move forward with even more ability to help people.
So you think this that it's from fear that comes this inability to forgive ourselves?
Yeah, fear is what makes us blind to the higher realities. Fear and desire of things that are more material.
Yes,
because the higher realities don't get. Let me give you a simple story of what I guess you'd call it forgiveness, but it's not, it's really simple. It's forgiveness is more profound when it's a deep, deep hurt. But it's a telling little story. When my son was 3 or 4, he had some magic markers and he scribbled all over this paneling.
Oh no.
And I couldn't get it off. And I am not handy. Give me a hammer and a nail, and things
are bad. You'll be minus a thumb, yes.
Things are bad.
Yeah.
So, and we would have had to remove everything and put up sheetrock. So it stayed there for years. Now, in the beginning, it was like an eyesore. When we finally did some renovations and the contractor came in and was tearing things down, I said, would you mind saving that for me? Now, he forgot to do it, but I wanted it because it no longer represented this eyesore. It was a wonderful, beautiful, touching, you know, memory of my son in his innocence at age 3.
Yeah.
So I was looking at it from a higher perspective. And we have access to do that quickly. With so many things,
yes.
The person in front of you, if the light turns green and they're not going, why not? And you get angry. Well, maybe they have a lot on their mind. Maybe there's a child in the car who's distracting them. Well, maybe they're just on their cell phone, all right? But we don't know the answer. So why not give the benefit of the doubt and, you know, wish them well in our mind.
Yes. Fill their car with light.
I
tell people that driving, cars were invented by God as the best possible exercise in forgiveness because there are so many opportunities we drive to make a choice. That's one of the things I love about your book because you empower people by telling them the choice is really theirs. They can continue to, and I know people who are doing this, to make whatever has upset them the center of their lives for the rest of their lives. They have the power to do that. They have the right to do that. It's just that if they do that, they won't grow spiritually, and this lifetime is essentially wasted.
Yes. And sometimes when it comes to forgiveness, because they say, this is so hard for me to forgive, whether it's themselves or somebody else's.
Yes.
So I say, let's start with acceptance. Can you just accept that this other person hurt you? You don't have to like it. You accept the reality of it. And then I say, take the tiniest bit of goodwill for that person. It could be that you pray for them. It could be that you hope they improve their life, right? And you don't even have to tell them. You just have to think it. And it could be the smallest little bit. I said, that is the beginning of beneficence and compassion, and you've already been on that road of forgiveness. So don't think of it as the warm fuzzies, oh, I love you, oh, all is forgiven, because sometimes you can't feel that way if the hurt against you is very deep and profound. But you can still hope that that other person grows or learns something.
Do you find that your patients or clients, whatever you call them, have trouble with that first step of accepting that it happened? I don't like it, but it happened. Is that hard to say?
They actually do struggle with it because sometimes it's a semantic thing. They think acceptance means they tolerate it or it's acceptable. And it's not. It's not. It's accepting the given, the reality of the situation. And I've had people who say, I persevere. I don't just accept. Acceptance means surrender. I never surrender.
Yeah.
I'm always fighting.
Yes.
You know, but I say, but there are some things we can't change.
Yes. Reality is reality. Exactly.
Yes.
That's it.
Right. So we have to accept that given. And from there, we can then say, okay, now where do I want to go with it? But otherwise, you're resisting a reality. It's like getting in a tug of war with reality. Now, who's going to win?
Yes, that's right. We're getting near to the end of our time, and there are other things I had wanted to talk about that we're not even going to get to. I just cannot be enthusiastic enough about this book as a way for people to grow spiritually. But one more thing I'd like you to address. You talk about the difference between sympathy and empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
Yeah. Sympathy, we can feel bad for somebody, you know, and then we change the channel.
Yeah.
All right.
Or we think he brought it on himself. We're not.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That's one thing. When we feel compassionate, we try to feel compassionate, the basic things we look for are You know, did this person do it themselves? And if they did, well, I don't have a lot of sympathy for that
person.
That's how people think.
Yeah.
Right? Empathy is really kind of living in their shoes and kind of thinking, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. I can't tell you how many people come into my office, maybe they had an affair, and they're saying, I never thought I was the kind of person who would do this.
Yes.
And I've judged other people who've done this, and now I've gone and done it myself.
Yes.
Right? And it's startling to realize, you know, it's hard to stay on the straight and narrow. And you might think well of yourself, but under what conditions might you stumble? All right? So empathy for others is realizing that we all are imperfect and that we can try to more deeply understand what they might be going through. We may not agree with their choices, but can we understand the spirit of what they're going through and care about it?
The book is called Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces, and the author is Paul Coleman, who has you have a clinical practice, right? So people could contact you and make an appointment to see you if they felt you could help them.
Yes, and my website is findingpeaceinyourheart.com.
Findingpeaceinyourheart.com. Well, that's what we're all looking for, isn't it? These things work. I think perhaps that's what I want to add. This isn't just superficial. What we're doing here is some very core surgery on our deepest selves and rebuilding ourselves as we should be all along, who we more truly are, flowers when we get at these issues. And frankly, Paul, your book and T.J. Woodward's book and the Gospels are all doing the same repair work. And I think your book does it very well because it's so basic. It takes us right down to the rebuilding. It doesn't require that we do anything other than follow the steps. And having worked with a lot of people, I can say those steps are going to work beautifully. I just love this book.
Well, thank you. And I really appreciate all the work that you're doing. It's making a huge difference.
Bless you, dear. I'm sorry, but this is when we're going to have to stop. I'm going to try to have Paul back because I know other people are going to want to hear him. This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. I'll never stop saying that. You never began. You never will end. When you fully grasp what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, of course, past episodes of Seek Reality are available on this website, webtalkradio.net, and also on iTunes. It's always free. Just search for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. As you know, because I say it every week, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and Flying High in Spirit. And I should say now that by the time you read this, all those books are available in bookstores, and they're in stock by all the major chains. So go ahead and ask, please, if you don't see them on the shelves, they were sold out. I'm hearing from people, I can't find it, and I'm saying, but they're stocked. So help us to get them to reorder more quickly. That would be lovely of you to do that. Our guest next week will be Laura Lynn Jackson. She's a psychic medium, and she tells her own powerful, uplifting story in her new book, The Light Between Us. I think you're going to love Laura, and I hope you'll join us. This week, we've been talking with the learned and wise and loving Dr. Paul Coleman. His book, Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces, and I have to say again, what a great title. It's a simple and effective blueprint for processing and growing from a tragedy, a loss, or just anything in your life that's kind of knocked the pins out from under you. And where you're going is the same place we're all supposed to be going, toward greater spiritual growth. He does it in such a simple, gentle way. I think you're going to love this book as I do. Dear friends, it's important never to forget that nearly every bad thing or upsetting thing that happens in our lives is something we chose either before we were born or during our nighttime guidance sessions with our spirit guides. We chose these things eagerly. Why? Well, you can't build your physical muscles without exercise, and you can't grow spiritually just by talking about it. You've got to come into this spiritual gym that we call human life and get on some really rough exercise machines and give your own spiritual growth everything you've got. Paul's book is a wonderful way for you. If you've been, now's the time, you're on that machine, you don't know what to do. Paul's book will help you use it to the maximum growth you can possibly get from it. Actually, Friedrich Nietzsche said more eloquently what I just said. He said, "That which does not kill us makes us stronger." Since you chose these disasters, and you chose them so you could grow from them, you have to understand your own growth is a choice, but once you've made that choice and the thing has happened, Paul reminds us yet again that there are tried and true, timeless ways for us to go ahead and make the most of what has happened to us. And there are beautiful people like Dr. Coleman who will help us every step of the way. For now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you're infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.